Bon Radio. One question which frequently causes the lips of our listeners to pucker and leak vital oral fluids is, what is an accordion? And when can I hear one? Which is, of course, two questions, but the laws of theoretical fundamental inquiry rarely apply on the New Music Sesquihour, so no matter. An accordion is a thermonuclear musical instrument with pleated bellows that closely resembles the Honda motor car after which it was named. With the optional keyboard and portable metal reeds, it can produce a sound not unlike the ruminations of thousands of congested sand fleas. In the hands of the properly trained individual, however, it also has many destructive capabilities. For centuries, martial artists have revered the accordion as a weapon to be used in only the highest form of sonic ritual. Brown belt Aikido mavens traditionally serenade their opponents with them while performing feng shui, or the worst plucked parts of the crow. In 14th century Tibet, the great monk Zanamuse, purporting to experiment with his mantra, played Lady of Spain on his accordion for 182 continuous hours until the device was confiscated by Lamassery police.
I was there, I remember that. It affected me tremendously throughout my life.
Can you hum Lady of Spain?
I gag.
One of the loudest 20th century instrumental compositions, Le
Flambeau Orange,
scored for 80 amplified accordions, premiered 16 years ago today atop Mount Tumwater, a remote mountain peak in southwest Washington state. Shortly after the opening chord was sounded, discombobulating subterraneous subduction forces caused a formerly dormant volcano a dozen miles to the south, Mount St. Helens, to spew hot lava and create a new national monument. The composer, sad to say, had selected that very site to listen to the performance, and he vanished just as a thriving tourist industry was born. Here now is an excerpt from Le Flambeau Orange. Music for 80 amplified accordions 12 miles from Mount St. Helens in 1980 by, well, we just don't know. Later on today's show, and live from Studio Z, we'll be treated to more accordion music by a famous composer who, if I mentioned her name, you'd recognize in an instant. And have no fear, in laboratory tests from around the world, no one has ever spewed lava, been attacked by crows, or bought a car while in the presence of a single accordion. To paraphrase a recently received letter, this episode of Calvo San Damian's New Music Sesquihour, the 52nd, is being broadcast today for good luck. The signal has been around the world 9 times. You, our listening audience, will receive good luck within 4 days of hearing this broadcast. Please record it and send it on to 20 other people. Do not send money or anything but the broadcast. Please send it 5 days after receiving it. Many people have received large sums of money after sending it on. It works. Signed, St. Jude.
The Obscure?
The Obscure.
Thank you.
We would only add that you may send large sums of money to Calvo San Damian here at the Sesqui Studios, and in return, we will not celebrate the 166th birthday of Carl Goldmark today, whose music has not infrequently been compared to the worst plucked parts of the crow.
Or Le Flambeau Orange.
Bon.
Bon. I have remembered that.
We would only further add that Anne Boleyn, Henry VIII's second wife, received this message 460 years ago, ignored it, and was subsequently beheaded. Just don't say we didn't warn you. And speaking of warm, Studio Z is really heating up now, with thermonuclear squawks reverberating off its sand, flea-encrusted walls. And here with the play-by-play of the Sesquihour's entertainment spectacle du jour and no pal of Carl Goldmark is Calvos.
Oui, Calvos is here. And today's guest is, in fact, that famous single accordion of the avant-garde. Do you know that only 3 letters are in common between avant-garde and accordion? Can you name them?
Goldmark.
Right.
Crow.
Yes.
And Honda.
Ah, very good. Well said.
I was paying attention.
I knew you were. Our guest is Pauline Oliveros. It's a live concert in the studio, and you can come on down. It's happening in about 15 minutes. Pauline will be on to introduce things just ahead of time, and then we'll get to the live concert in Studio Z. So if you're in listening range and can get here ahead of the local gendarmes in 20 minutes, you can be here for the live concert in Studio Z with Pauline Oliveros on the Sesquihour. In the meantime, you're listening to not Le Flambeau Orange, but...
But what?
But what? I can never remember the order of the names. This is The Gentle by Pauline Oliveros. This was recorded in a giant water tank in Cologne, Germany.
Those Germans just know how to record, how to put together a recording studio.
So they do. So let's listen to the end of The Gentle by Pauline Oliveros, and we'll see how she's coming down in Studio Z and then have a little conversation with her in just a bit. The Gentle by Pauline Oliveros.
The Gentle by Pauline Oliveros, our featured Studio Z guest today here on the New Music Sesco Hour from WGTR Plainfield. I should point out that an accordion is shaped somewhat like the Honda motor car, but the device that Pauline has on today's program is a smaller version, the compact two-door version. It's also several important birthdays today. Coleman Hawkins, who used to play the accordion and also danced a lot in the 1950s with certain pieces of furniture, at least that's what it says on the record jacket. Oh, wait, the record jacket is in French. I'm misreading it. Anyway, I do have something by Ornette Coleman. No, Coleman Hawkins. They're all the same. Ornette Coleman Hawkins, one and the same person. Ornette Coleman Hawkins.
Which one? Oh, wait, they're still playing. Is birthday boy Coleman Hawkins' birthday?
He either birthed or died on this day. And
you have the list, or do I have the list? Wait, I have it right here. I have the list.
That's tomorrow. He exited tomorrow.
Oh, he exited tomorrow in 1969. Okay, Coleman Hawkins celebrating, I love to say that, celebrating the death of, doesn't matter who dies, we always celebrate. We never mourn.
And this was the cut right before the Sheik of Araby, whatever it was.
Whatever it was.
Good. That's very, very informative. That's what we needed to know.
I thought you might.
Indeed. Pauline!
Oh, wait.
Yes, let's do this. We have to have a very distinct pronunciation of your last name, because I've been faking it for something on the order of 30 years, trying to make it between a long O and a short one, hoping one of those would be correct.
Well, try Oliveros.
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 Now, Oliveros with a little roll.
A little roll.
Ooh. Welcome to the Calvos and Damian New Music Sesqui Hour.
Oh, well, it's really a pleasure to be here, and I see we're going to have some fun.
Yes, we are. If we get everything right today, you've had a long ride, and we are twisting and turning knobs and not being very coherent. So,
hey, speak for yourself.
Oh, okay. I'll speak for myself. I have not been very coherent. So welcome, and how was the ride up on this day?
Well, it was rainy. sometimes, you know, deluge, and sometimes really fine mist on the windshield, but beautiful green, all the way from Kingston, New York, up to Plainfield.
How about some history? I'll tell my 60 seconds. I was a student at Rutgers University from 1966 to 70, and sometime during that time at the sister college, Douglas College, I was taking some courses, and I had the great pleasure of meeting you and hearing your music for the first time there. And over the years, I've just kind of followed along and said, oh, this is more interesting stuff. Then we played today a little excerpt from The Gentle, from The Well and The Gentle, which to me was an absolutely monumental work, especially the whole idea of where you did it and the acoustics and the whole concept. So how about the Pauline Oliveros history?
The Pauline Oliveros history. Well, it started somewhere in the island of Minorca, and also Corsica, when my ancestor sailed and shipwrecked and washed up on the shore of St. Augustine in Florida.
Wow, really?
No, you, that.
This is good. This is great.
So at least that's on my father's side. But in any case, you mentioned the Douglas College concert.
Right.
That was curated by Jeff Hendricks, the performance artist who was a dear friend and a wonderful artist. In that concert, I was talking to my partner, Ionia, on the way from your house over here to the studio about that particular concert, because it was a kind of a landmark in that I had begun my work called Sonic Meditations in about 1969,
right,
70.
Right.
And this concert took place around 1974, 73, 74.
Right.
I can't remember exactly when. But it is a good 30 years back.
And, getting there, anyway.
Right. And on that program, I did some things that were really new to be doing in a public situation called a concert, because these were meditative works. I remember one piece consisted of white noise, listening to white noise. For half an hour, I believe.
we could do that here.
Yeah, you could have some
here.
Pretty interesting artifacts that come about. But when it's framed in a concert, it's a somewhat different situation. But that was one, and there was a piece called "Teach Yourself to Fly," which has to do with following one's breath and then allowing the vocal cords to vibrate naturally without trying to make a particular kind of sound, but to feel what the sound wants to do. And that was part of that meditation, which this concert was done mostly with the audience doing the performing.
What led you to those kinds of ideas? How did you get from the family washed up on the shore to the to the meditative notion?
Well, I had to do something to calm my background, right?
Good. All right.
After all, I mean, there was more to that story. I mean, Isidro Oliveros sailed on a Spanish ship with his grandson, Sebastian, who was four. And pirates came into the ship.
Even more, all
right. There were pirates, and the pirates' captain opened the sea chest the Isidro was carrying, and in the sea chest he found ritual instruments of masonry, because he was a mason. It was it belonged to the Masonic order. So the pirate captain was also a mason, so he ordered all the pirates off the ship, and it sailed on, only to meet misfortune in the form of wreckage. And Isidro actually drowned. And Sebastian, the grandson, who was 4 years old, held onto the sea chest and washed up on the shore of St. Augustine. And the sea chest is now in the oldest house in St. Augustine. And you can find a replica of Sebastian's house in the old town called Casa de Oliveros. So, this is not much about music, but it turns out that all my Oliveros ancestors are from Menorca. The island of Menorca are singers and dancers.
Uh-huh.
And they sometimes come to Florida, where there is a Menorcan colony in near St. Augustine, and they do sing and dance. And I hope someday to catch up with that. I've never met them.
Wow. So somehow during the course of
The white noise, right?
The white noise, yeah. The white noise. This is it. I mean, it's like putting the conch shell up to the ear from the wreckage.
I put conch shells up to my lips actually, but and blow them. But yes, I think there's a relationship there because I was always fascinated with conch shells from the first time I ever came in contact with one. Which must have been when I was very little, because my father was a boat captain, and we lived near the water, Galveston, and so those kinds of shells were around, and I did listen to them, so and found it a very fascinating thing to do, because as listening has always been a very very engaging activity for me.
Well, you've even talked about meditative type of thing and your deep listening organization. I mean, you even have that wonderful name.
Yes, deep listening.
Is that your invention?
Yes, it is. It's my. In fact, we have. It's a trademark of Pauline Oliveros Foundation, which is an organization that I have.
You've got a foundation. You've got a website. You've got CDs. You've got, and you've got an accordion. What more could one want?
I don't know. It's a long career. I mean, we can hardly scratch the surface.
Let's play some music, and then we'll get back to it.
Okay.
You said we should follow up the Coleman Hawkins with a duet.
Yes.
And what is this duet?
Well, this is on our recent compact disc called Tosca Salad. Now,
I like that.
You like that?
Yeah, I like that.
Well, it's on the menu at Mary P's in Kingston, New York, so you can go there and order Tosca Salad, but you won't get this.
I hope not. It's very difficult with French dressing on it, or would I be using some Italian vinaigrette? I don't know.
Yeah, we call it Tosca Salad because this CD is a sampler of deep listening band work from the last 3 years, the excerpts from different rehearsals and performances. This is our own label, actually, Deep Listening, which is the label. And it's the third in four releases that we've done in a year.
Wow.
The first one, I believe, you featured here, Joel Chatterby's After Some Songs.
That's right, After Some Songs. We played many excerpts from that when Joel was on the show, and also a kind of a regular on that has been the first cut on that.
Yeah. And
Valentine.
So in any case, Tosca Salad is the sampler, and we like the title because... It gives a feeling of a lot of different kinds of things, which there definitely are. And this duo is Stuart Dempster, who plays trombone, and didgeridoo, and it's me on playing my accordion. So I was listening to Coleman Hawkins and heard the trombone player, and I thought, oh, you should really follow it up with this.
Great. Here it is, a duet from Tosca Salad. You're listening. Oh, I should, it's time to satisfy, first of all, the FCC requirements. So you're listening to the Calvos and Damian New Music Sesquire on WGDR Plainfield. The live concert begins in about 10 minutes, so hustle on down here to the station, and we'll be back right after this duet. There's an excerpt. The Deep Listening Band, that's Pauline Oliveros and Stuart Dempster. From, is this a new CD?
Yes, released just a few months ago. It's our own label, Deep Listening. It's available from through the Deep Listening catalog.
Yes, we have copies right here at the studio, so if anybody's interested, we'll certainly be able to get a copy of those. You can also look up Deep Listening on the Internet. Here's an easy one to remember. This is the Deep Listening homepage. It's http://, the usual start, www.deeplistening.org. So check them out, because there's some really interesting stuff to be found. Gosh, you've been on the Internet a while. We'll ask you some of those questions maybe later. But
okay. Yeah, we have been around a while.
Really? How about the accordion? It is
not
Myron Florin's accordion, is it? It's
not, no.
I bet you don't play Lady of Spain on that one.
Well, I mean,
Would you
not?
Can we get you to play Lady of Spain?
I might hide it in there. You never know, so just be careful.
We'll whistle along. This is a just-tuned accordion. You want to explain what that means?
Well, my accordion is tuned in a couple of systems of just intonation, which means that the intervals, the fifth, the consonant intervals are quite pure. I have one kind of tuning in my right hand and another kind in my left hand, which gives me six common tones and then six that are different and a lot of fun. They cause a lot of color. Pure consonant intervals make the instrument sound very resonant.
By pure consonant intervals, you mean?
Intervals without beats.
Right. I think if a listener were to listen very carefully to an ordinary piano that's properly tuned in the in the conventional style, equal temperament, and they listen very carefully playing an open fifth, say a C to a G, they would not hear a kind of a bong, but rather a kind of a bow wow, ever so slightly, because because the tuning, this equal tuning, doesn't quite match the laws of physics, whereas just intonation does it differently.
Well, it comes closer. Yeah. But there's always discrepancies. Mm-hmm. I mean, the intervals are all unequal, and rather than equal, like ordinary tuning. And that was, I mean, the equal temperament came about for reasons of harmony and being able to play in different keys. But I'm not particularly concerned with that.
You're searching for color and...
Color and interesting sounds.
Yeah.
Yes. And so... often when people ask me, what do you play? And I say, well, I play the accordion. Of course, Myron Florin comes right to mind. I just saw a special on PBS the other day. I watched it because I thought, I want to, know what it is that the image of Lawrence Welk and Myron Florin, what was so gripping to people. And I looked at it and I saw... You know, the 1950s, the culture of the 1950s, and I saw how very precise Lawrence Welk was with his conducting.
Rumor has it that he was an absolute taskmaster with that group.
Yes, absolutely, because I mean it's militaristic, really militaristic, and the boys and the girls are separated very carefully. They're dressed completely asexually. You know, so that they just really come off as these really clean kids. I mean, there's nothing threatening, absolutely nothing threatening.
And they all smile endlessly.
Oh, yes, the smiles are there, and everybody's having a good time, and Lawrence is, wielding that little stick.
You're saying Lawrence had a little stick.
I mean, that was real discipline there, right? Not like us coyotes here who, just do all kinds of really devil-may-care kinds of things, huh? But it was interesting to see that, and because I hadn't seen it for a long time. But to get the culture, and it definitely is a particular kind of culture. And it's no wonder the 60s blew the top off the thing.
Mm-hmm. But so this is your instrument. How does someone make a transition from that traditional way of doing something, the Lady of Spain-esque type stuff, to having that level of, you know, I'm asking you basically how your creative act mm-hmm. Was born out of that.
Yeah, well, you know, my former accordion teacher just passed away on April 30th. His name was Willard Palmer, and he was a wonderful teacher. I studied with him from 1945 to the 51, and he was a very interesting accordion player. And he played all the commercial accordion music, mm-hmm. and he was a virtuoso. But he also was interested in playing Bach organ works and things on the accordion. And he taught me all of these things. But the one thing that he did that I think influenced a great deal of what I was able to discover later on was he pointed out to me how rich the accordion is in combination tones, so that when you play two tones together, what happens is a difference tone appears, the difference between the two frequencies mm-hmm. that are sounding. And he pointed that out to me one day, and it made me listen very carefully to the reeds. And what's wrong with a lot of accordion playing is that people are putting their fingers down and playing the notes, but they're not listening.
Mm. Mm.
So it was the act of listening, and of course it's been elaborated for me into what I call deep listening.
Deep listening, yeah, there it is.
And hearing is one thing. I mean, hearing is a relatively passive act because, I mean, a physical phenomenon.
Yeah, we have no ear flaps. So
no, we don't have
there,
ear flaps.
Yeah.
The hearing is there, but what we do have is attention, and whether we can focus it or diffuse it. And listening is the act of interpreting and managing and interpreting what we hear, using it. You know. But if you hear, I mean, if sound waves are coming in and you're not paying attention to them, then you're not listening, even though you may be hearing.
I think we as a culture may suffer from that because of the onslaught everywhere from the elevator to the Grand Union music network that mm-hmm. drives the little bits of compressed music home.
Yes, well, we're in a very polyglot, multidimensional cultural time, and it's very different from what I experienced as a child. And what I experienced and stored up in my memory as a child is very different from what, say, a 20-something has experienced.
Right.
So we're, you know, really different cultures. I mean, there's all kinds of cultures. There's this culture, the radio studio culture.
Yes.
You know, and you have a complete understanding of a lot of things that people who have never been in a radio station would have any understanding of.
They wouldn't believe the gleaming technology which surrounds us here.
All the blinkety blinks and knobs and switches and this and that. So.
Well, we should give you a chance to get settled down in the performance studio so we can get
I'll give you a little live demo of my accordion and just intonation and I'll play something that I call accordion mirages.
Ooh, that's a nice phrase.
And you may hear something in it that's not what I'm hearing, and that's the mirage.
What's that? What is that? No, I won't ask you what it means. We'll just listen to it deeply and do it. And in the meantime, while you're getting settled, we will listen to, also from Tusca Salad, we'll listen to Dream Time. the deep listening band, Dreamtime, Pauline Oliveros and friends.
Funny, it made me hungry.
Made you hungry?
Yes.
Food time.
That too.
Well, it's... What kind of food? Let's find out if your food and my food match on this.
I got the feeling of large marshmallows.
Marshmallows.
And...
Marshmallows, like in an accordion.
Exactly.
That's what
shaped
it was. It's
like
really
a Honda.
Yes, that's what it is. Well, time to hear a live performance on a just-tuned accordion with Pauline
Oliveros. You mean just recently tuned?
That too. As a matter of fact, I believe she was opening the packing box. So, let's turn it over to Studio Z and Pauline Oliveros.
Well, you know, I often pack my accordion with marshmallows, so make sure that it gets there all right.
Marshmallows and peanuts, or just marshmallows?
Just marshmallows, no chocolate.
So I hear it. It's breathing.
Yes,
yeah,
it's
right.
Breathing.
This is part of my mystique, is letting the instrument breathe.
What's that squealing?
It's the Electrolux that's helping it breathe.
Well, this is to let you know that it's living.
We have some Deacon Justice up here, if that would help.
So, okay.
Well, lead us through. Tell us what we're going to hear. And
well, I'm going, as I said before, I'm going to play a piece that's called Accordion Mirages. And
accordion is three words, accordion, which
accordion.
Is accordion.
Accordion.
Which is French for the heart of the of Dion's heart.
So, or you can just call it the squeeze box. So, okay, here we go. The thing is that as I play this, you might hear your own thing as I'm playing. And that has to do with the notion of mirages because of the kinds of sounds that I'm going to be sustaining in it. Maybe you'll find something.
Thank you.
Pauline Oliveros, our guest. Mirages.
What comes to mind, to my mind, admittedly...
Your mind,
my
right.
mind is, we have on in the past had people on the program who have played using circular breathing, and a couple of weeks ago...
There it is.
A couple of weeks ago, the art of circular heaving almost came up, but not quite. So, Pauline, would this be an example of circular squeezing?
Circular squeezing. Well, I think it's all of it. Circular heat breathing. Heap a lot of breathing.
Heap a lot of
deep
breathing.
Breathing.
Deep breathing. Let's continue.
What are we going to continue?
Lady of Spain would be a hot number up here.
I played it.
Yeah, we did hear excerpts, but we whetted our appetites.
Yeah, but I played it already. What else are we going to do? This was one of the mirages.
Yes, I was suitably miraged.
So did you hear something?
I did.
Marshmallow-like. Marshmallow-like. Where do we go from here?
Something snappy?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, let's...
I had done it.
You had done it?
I had done it, yeah.
There's no more to be said. It has been said and stated.
Well, just to be serious a second, I'm sorry. The difference in sound between... tempered tuning and just intonation. The intonation of your instrument is spectacular. Mm-hmm. It is really amazing. Particularly when you brought some of the notes that were very, very close together. I don't know how to describe that. The effect of that beating inside clusters of other notes, but it's really rather remarkable.
Thank you.
How much of this is worked out ahead of time, and how much of it is improvised?
Okay, that's the perennial question, isn't it?
Other than Lady of Spain, yes, it is the perennial question.
Well, we were talking earlier about the difference between hearing and listening. And the piece, anything that I play, has to do with management, interpretation, and decisions that are listening-based. So what I'm hearing is then listened to. And that's what's guiding the playing. It's a mysterious process. So, we can refer to it as improvisation. But the term is very broad-based, and it doesn't really deal with the issue of what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, where do you start, then?
I start by listening.
Uh-huh.
And, listening really leads one into altered states of consciousness. When we're merely, letting sound waves impinge upon our ears, and maybe just playing notes or having some lick we're trying to do, there's a difference. Or following a codified chord progression, or working out a melody, or concentrating on rhythm. These are all different kinds of ways of using one's attention, but it may not result in a multi-dimensional form of listening. So my base for performing anything is how much can I listen to at once? How can I challenge myself as far as possible?
That's a good question in a number of levels. When you were doing the duet with Stuart Dempster, I'm assuming that that's involved there too. So let me ask you, at what point do there become, say, too many people?
Well, I've done some sonic meditations with as many as 6,000 people.
In one room?
No, outside. And also, to take a smaller group, 1,000 people, say, at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in New York. And it's a very beautiful space with wonderful waves of sound coming through. It's not a matter of too many or too few. It's a matter of how well you're listening.
Do you sub-vocalize when you play?
I don't think so.
That was my tendency when I was listening to it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I'm glad you brought that up because people always or very often tell me that they feel like singing when I'm performing. And I always say, well, how come you didn't? And then, you know, I try to make an invitation often so that people can join in.
We have a small number of people in the audience down there. Is it possible that you would invite them into the situation today, or would you like to go on with another piece?
Well, I think we have some little time. I mean, but how is our time?
Our time is good. We have another 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because we've got some other things to play. But I'll do a. Another piece which invites people to join in. Everyone has an invitation. Okay?
Great.
Including the old radio audience, however many they may be or not be.
Audience is what we usually say, our audience.
Okay. All right. Here we go.
just in time to the live studio.
Yes, we were down there enjoying it with you. As we're out of breath.
Yes, really. Gosh, you guys really raced back up there, didn't you?
We did, but just in time. So you were...
Just in time and just intonation.
Yes. It was quite lovely.
Thank you.
One of the things that I noticed as I was sitting there joining you in the vocal part, sort of letting that happen, was that my heartbeat was actually sort of bouncing the tone around a little bit.
Nice.
I hadn't noticed that before. I hadn't noticed that I gotten into a sort of a place where the pitch was actually altered by my sort of other body aspects going on. It's very quite beautiful.
Yes, well, as you get into that, lots of different kinds of rhythms of the body take part. And there's a kind of a sensing of many different aspects of the kinds of sensitivities that really exist if you are listening and you find them, discover them.
Spend a lot of time with that that feeling of that open fifth, that very rich kind of... I say rich, isn't that strange? Because most people consider that an empty sound in traditional harmonic speaking, but I find it really rich and full. What's your feelings about that
particular one?
Sound, yeah.
Yes, well, because the instrument is so rich in overtones... there's a lot of interplay of upper partials, even though you're holding one sound. Many other things are happening, and so that if you sustain it long enough, then you can begin to direct attention to that interplay that's going on. So where you thought nothing was happening, myriads of things are happening. And this is true as the energy flows through the body as well. And when we pay attention to it, it becomes more and more amazing.
Do you distract yourself if you have your eyes open?
No, I can work with eyes open, but eyes closed gives me a heightened sense of hearing,
mm-hmm.
And also heightened sense of space, what's around me.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Pauline Oliveros on the Calvus and Damien New Music Sesquihour on WGDR Plainfield. That's a very unrelaxing interruption.
Identification.
Shall we talk about what's coming up next week in concert now? Or
oh, yes, I think that would be a good idea.
Right. Yeah.
Deep Listening Band, which originates from Kingston, New York, will be having a concert on May 25th in Kingston at the Trinity United Methodist Church at 8 p.m. Stuart Dempster will be there. Stuart lives in Seattle. David Gamper lives in Kingston, as I do. And we keep the band together through email.
An email band. That's great.
Right.
That's great.
So we always are talking to one another, and then Stuart meets up with us. For example, now we have the concert on May 25th. We also are going to repeat the concert on May 30th in New York City at Merkin Concert Hall, World Music Institute's Interpretations Series. And we have two commissioned works. One is by Thomas Buckner, who is a wonderful baritone, and has made a piece for us called Declaration of Independence. And this is very interesting because he's making a listening strategy for us where we try to find a way to be independent of each other in the performing. How's it going to work?
Yeah, what is the listening strategy? Do you have a description of that already?
We will begin rehearsing it right away now and get in depth with it and into the details of it.
You don't rehearse by email then?
Well, sometimes. But so that's Tom's piece. And then there's a new piece by Joe Giardullo, who is, plays flutes and saxophones, and he's made a piece called Elemental Ode, and he's written a text for it, which is dedicated to the stone workers of Cerula in Italy. And it's a piece, the text will be done by Thomas Buckner, and then we'll be performing it. And then it also involves some strategies that we'll have to absorb as we before we play.
What does that mean, strategy?
Okay, well, a strategy is our guidelines for, in this case, for performing. So there are things that you're, where your attention is directed, and things that you do. Let me see what would be a good example of a strategy. Well, one strategy is don't play anything unless you can hear it first.
Okay.
That would be a strategy.
Yep.
Yes. Then you would have available to you a large number of tactics, and they would all work if you actually hear what you're going to do before you do it. And that would mean that there was probably space or time that gets interpolated because you're concentrating your attention to hear something before you play it. So that would be one strategy.
So this is different from what you might call if you were working in a jazz improvisatory mode. You would be working on chordal kinds of ideas which are set out. Your strategy might be to comp on the chords.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. So I mean, there's all kinds of strategies available.
So, the Deep Listening Band will be playing May 25th in Kingston, New York at the Trinity United Methodist Church, and on May 30th at Merkin Hall in Manhattan.
Right.
Great.
Yes.
What kind of maintenance is involved in your instrument? I mean, do you have to get it oiled and silenized?
get the oil changed. Well, I just did that. I sent it to my manufacturer. This is Ernst Deffner Company in Mineola. Faith Deffner, who has been very faithful all these years, helping me with this instrument, keeping it in good shape. This is a Titano accordion, and it was manufactured in Castelfidardo in Italy and assembled there in Mineola. The design of the instrument was done by my former teacher, Willard Palmer, and it has what's called a free bass mechanism, which gives me single notes.
Notes. I was mm-hmm. hoping you would say notes and didn't have anything to do with cocaine.
A free bass accordion.
Yeah, free
right.
bass.
Yeah.
So I free bass without any of the damaging effects.
So somebody actually designs the instruments. You know, it's hard for me to imagine that instrument design still continues.
Well, consider that the instrument was first designed in 1830 in Vienna.
It's that recent. You know, I know nothing of the history of the accordion.
Well, let's go back a little further. The instrument is related to the Asian mouth organs, such as the Chinese Xing, and Japanese sho and the Thai can, it's called. These mouth organs are, for instance, the can is bamboo pipes with a free reed in each pipe, and you blow there's a gourd that these pipes are set into, and then the player cups the bowl and blows into the opening, and there are finger holes to change which pipe is engaged. And so this is the ancestor of the accordion and goes back many, many centuries. And there's a good story. There was a Chinese emperor who was very enamored of the cry of the phoenix bird. And so he sent his instrument maker off on a trek into the mountains to find a way to make an instrument that would represent the phoenix. And so after many years and lots of experiments, the instrument maker finally arrived, holding that gourd with the bamboo pipes And so and played it for the emperor, and of course the emperor was pleased, and the instrument maker was rewarded, and eventually resulted in the accordion.
Is it something that Marco Polo brought back, which is why it appeared in Italy?
Well, who knows?
Well,
who knows?
Skip that. All right.
It's a good story.
Yeah, it's a great story.
And actually, I have a new CD coming, which it's a duo CD on Big Cat Records, which originates from England. And this recording is called In the Shadow of the Phoenix. And it features myself and Randy Rain Rouge, who is a master of all the Asian mouth organs. And so we play a number of pieces on that CD with the accordion and with the Asian mouth organs. It's a very challenging situation. Mm. But it'll be coming. It should be out now, as a matter of fact.
Title? Do you know the
title? Title is In the Shadow of the Phoenix.
In the Shadow of the Phoenix.
And it's a Big Cat Records. Yeah.
Can you challenge us with some another piece?
Oh. Well.
And then we'll bring you back into the studio up here, and we can hear a little bit more about your life and your future plans as well.
Okay, here we go.
Thank you.
Not Your Everyday Accordion, live on the Calvos and Damian New Music Sesquihour.
To my mind, that's as close as you can get to a polka without actually being a polka.
You mean being one, as exactly. Opposed to playing one.
Precisely.
Pauline Oliveros, we'll come on up back to the on-air studio, and we'll give a little few more things about your upcoming concert. Meet you up here.
Hello there.
Yes. Heading on up?
Oh, all right.
All right.
Heading right up there as soon as I get unharnessed.
Okay. Live in Studio Z.
We should play something nice to bring her up.
Well, I think we should announce the concert again. May 25th in Kingston, New York, and May 30th in New York City at Merkin Hall. The Deep Listening Band. That's Pauline Oliveros, Stuart Dempster, and David Kemper. Also, their CDs are available on the Deep Listening label, and you can find those compact discs at their webpage at www.deeplistening.org. And also, there's a Pauline Oliveros Foundation, which has its own homepage, which has an address far beyond my ability to read. It's even longer than the Calvos and Damian website, but you can use your web crawler, web searchers to find it on with her name, Oliveros, O-L-I-V-E-R-O-S. Wonderful websites, beautifully designed, music to be heard, designs, well worth taking a look. So jump on there, www.deeplistening.org, and see what there is to see and hear what there is to hear. Wonderful catalog. We can get you a copy from here at the studio. We'll leave some for you to come get. And now Pauline Oliveros is back here in the studio, and it's time to talk about the Deep Listening Retreat.
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, this Deep Listening Retreat I have been doing every summer. This will be the sixth year coming up. And this retreat takes place in the Sangre de Cristo Mountains in New Mexico, just outside of Las Vegas, New Mexico. It's 8,000 feet up, so you're really high.
Ooh, now there's that deep breathing again. Oh, goodness.
And it's a beautiful private retreat center run by a friend of mine, so that we're the only thing happening, and it's a very beautiful, pristine environment. And there ain't no poisonous critters up there.
Well, that's all right.
Which is really nice. The only annoyance is an occasional mosquito.
Well, we believe it or not, we have them in the studio today.
No kidding.
We just got. I looked and I said, "Is that a mosquito?" And station manager Stu Bout said, "Yes, we have them. We're surrounded by woods, so I guess we're plagued with mosquitoes all summer, starting today."
Yeah. But in any case, Deep Listen Retreat. There are two of them this year. The first one is July 28th through August 2nd, and is for people who have not experienced my work before, or people who want to come back in. The second retreat follows August 4th through 9th, and is an advanced retreat. And I have many returning people, who have been 4 and 5 times to the retreats. And the second retreat is going to be very interesting for me, because it will be the initiation of a 3 years certificate program, because we're interested in people who want, if there are teachers who are interested in incorporating deep listening in their work with children and adults. And so I'm going to be teaching what it is that I do, trying to give people a deeper understanding of the process, the creative process that is involved. And we always do creative projects in these retreats, so that you can go to the website, deeplistening.org, and see the Deep Listening newsletter, and there are scores and stories and poems that have come as a result of the week. Up there on Rose Mountain.
Does this change how people listen in their everyday lives as well?
Well, it certainly can. And everyday life is certainly a part of listening. And it's not just listening to music or listening to perform, but it's listening for in at every level. Then it gets deep.
It's hard to talk about this. I mean, we have a sort of a limited amount of time, and we should really be having the listening community in here, sort of relaxing and having an opportunity. How do you make the transition into and out of playing each piece? What happens because you made this wonderful change? Between the middle piece that you played and then this wild I don't know how to describe it, but everyone's heard it. It almost sounded skitterish at first, and then it developed into this wonderful set of almost Baroque counterpoints. So what's going on? How did you make that happen so quickly?
Well, I think the best way I could describe it is energy. I mean, the feeling of wanting to move some energy around from so that to tap into the quicker rhythms that are going on, and maybe it's almost like sensing. All the different kinds of rhythms that one could find. For example, how often do you blink?
Mm-hmm. Good question.
And
as soon as you ask that question, I start doing it.
how often do you open your mouth and close it? How often do you, what's the tempo of your walking? Do you know what the rate of walking is, a normal walk? Mm. Do you know how slow you can walk? Do you know how fast you can walk? So there are all these rhythms that are going on all the time, and we're not paying much attention to them now, because they're just happening and part of our existence. Yes.
Some rhythms unfold very slowly, particularly yes. Here in Vermont. Of course, our seasonal rhythms are more obvious than it might be in an urban area.
Yes.
So we can see that kind of thing.
Yes, right. Yeah. So I mean, it's those kinds of things that are informing the playing, because I'm listening to them. and it's happening.
Where are you going from here? What's the future? You practically introduced the world to these meditative kinds of things a long time ago, and you've been developing them, working, the listening getting deeper, and the ideas are very, very mature. What's the future?
Well, I think it's transmitting it to others so that they can take it on if they want to. Trying to bring my knowledge and experience together and share it with people by providing an environment for these experiences to take place. And you're opening my Pauline Oliveros Foundation.
I was just
booklet.
About to ask you, tell us what the Pauline Oliveros Foundation is. It's been around here more than 10 years.
Right.
It's very, very well established. Tell us some more about it.
Well, it was established in 1985 by me as a means of providing a support platform or a support structure for the creation of new work, not only for myself but for others, and also to be a structure that could carry the ideas and philosophy of the kinds of work that I'm doing forward. And to give people a context for their own creative processes, because I don't think there are very many organizations or that I know of that do this or that are not concentrated on something like presenting rather than supporting creative process. And I feel that everyone in all society throughout every level needs to be able to access that in themselves.
Do you consult with businesses?
No, I haven't.
Would you? Would you consider something like that?
Sure, if they sure, I would, as a matter of fact, because, I mean, businesses have discovered that they need creativity, you know, and if they don't have it, their business doesn't survive very well. That's quite plain. Now we need businesses to tell government that creativity needs to be supported in the schools.
Have you done regular teaching in the schools? Has that been one of your venues?
Well, I was a professor at the University of California in San Diego for 14 years, and then I resigned because I felt that I wanted to pursue a freelance career and create this organization, because I thought that this is what I needed and what I knew a lot of others needed.
But you are you're going west again to teach.
Well, it happens that this is 96 seems to be the year of returning to academia on a visiting basis. I had a wonderful time teaching at Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois, in April, March-April, and then in the fall I'll be teaching a full semester at Mills College in Oakland, California. This, I should say, is a kind of an interesting return, because I was the first director of the Tape Music Center at Mills College in 1966-67, 30 years ago. This organization became the Center for Contemporary Music, which is
right.
What it goes
right.
under now. But it was because Martin Subotnick and Ramon Sender and myself formed the San Francisco Tape Music Center in 1960, because there was no place to work on electronic music for young composers
right.
anywhere,
right.
except maybe Columbia, Princeton.
And you really had to be associated with the schools pretty much to get access to that there.
But other schools had no studios of that kind anywhere. So that was the kind of prototype of an alternate organization. And it sort of really saved my life. It gave me a context, a place to practice my art and develop it. So that's why I guess I still think I need it. But anyway, here's the full circle return. I've taught before at Mills for a semester, but this semester I'll be teaching in the Darius Mio chair. with
yes. Yes.
Which is kind
Please
of
tell
wonderful.
Us that story.
Well, in the very early 50s, I was looking for a composition teacher, and I did call to see if it was possible to get an appointment with Mio, but he was too busy to see me. So it is. I met him, of course, and him and Madame Mio in 1966 when I was directing the Tate Music Center, which was my first experience in a position like that. So it's rather interesting to be returning in this capacity.
Well, you started the Tate Music Center, and you seem to be working almost entirely in a very personal acoustic realm. How do you feel about the burgeoning of electronics now? Do you feel that this is part of what you've brought out?
Well, I think I was a part of that evolution since I started working with tape in 1950, but the early 50s, when tape recorders first became available on the home market. My mother gave me one for my birthday in 1953.
Ooh, now there's a mother who had an idea. Wow,
yes,
that's
she did.
Great. That's
now,
great.
She continues to have ideas. She's quite amazing. But that tape recorder, I think tape recorder is the most important instrument of the 20th century in terms of music and musicians. It's a tool which has enabled the finest musicianship that you can imagine, because performers are able to get immediate feedback as to what they sound like, you know, from that.
And you don't appear to be working in the medium now, though.
Oh, yes.
There you are.
You mean tape?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's now hard disk recording.
Right, okay.
And computer control, so okay. That...
So part of what we heard today live, you actually had some electronic work going on there, did you not? Did you have a little acoustic manipulation with the echo?
Oh, well, the audio engineer, what is his name?
Greg. Thank you, Greg Noble,
Greg,
right.
Greg Noble provided me with a living, you know, livening up the studio room, which is very... dead acoustically.
Uh-huh.
So yes, that was a little acoustic manipulation, but then I was listening to it very, very carefully.
We have really run out of time. This has been a wonderful, wonderful couple of hours. Maybe you could leave us with some ideas, some things that we should have started asking you about, some things we should have talked about.
Well, let's see. We talked about the foundation. We talked about the website.
Sure.
You know, deeplistening.org, www.deeplistening.org.
We got that.
Yes. And you can go there. You can find information about the retreats, about the Deep Listening Band, and our the history and timeline of the band, the discography. You can find Deep Listening Catalog, which has the work of over 85 composers.
It's a phenomenal catalog. Anyone who hasn't had a look at the catalog, you can get one here, or you can go right to the website and have a look. It has got some of the most remarkable composers of the latter half of the 20th century. You know?
Yeah, in my introduction in the catalog, it is, I can't remember exactly what I say there, but it's something about what does it say there?
Which part would you like?
Right in the beginning. Let me see here. Maybe I can pull it up because here it is. What is new music in the 20th century? What will it be in the 21st century? What composers are at the leading edge? What composers will synthesize or codify the cogent changing characteristics of our time and make it manifest in our music? Who listens to new music? What is its importance? Answers to these questions might be found within this catalog now and as it expands in the future.
Ah, excellent. And it's very interesting, as we were flipping through this catalog, I noticed that some of the things that we have played on the show are part of a sort of historical legacy in the catalog as well.
That's right.
Are the proud possessors of original copies of The Expanding Universe, which is Laurie Spiegel's album, and the wonderful American Tech sound pieces, which we've also played on this show.
Right, exactly.
It's a wonderful catalog. It's a document in itself of the present.
A part of it, yes. Yeah. It's a part of it, and it fills a real need for some distribution of works that are otherwise rather difficult to find.
So let's go out with one last piece from the new Jeep.
How about From Now On?
From Now On, okay.
It's all a piece by the band, and it's a vocal piece, and I hope you enjoy it.
Thank you. A production, 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 a production,